barred the networks from producing their own programming, so they bought it from the studios for the initial broadcast, and then the syndication rights reverted to the studios, an enormously lucrative windfall to Hollywood, and one the industry lobbied fiercely for in Washington. Under Diller and Eisner's leadership, Paramount Television had five of network TV's top 10 hits: Taxi, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Angie, and Mork and Mindy. Eisner prided himself on keeping costs modest. Some thought it bordered on obsession. He preferred to develop ideas generated internally at Paramount rather than high-priced agents and packagers, a strategy aimed at hitting singles and doubles, as he put it, rather than home runs. For Eisner, the quality of the story was all important, not high-priced directors and stars. He looked for stories with compelling characters, clear conflict and resolution, three easily identifiable acts, and universal themes that could be summarized, that is, marketed, in a sentence or two. This approach, dubbed high concept in the parlance of Hollywood, spawned many imitators, but few were as successful as Eisner and Diller. For all of Paramount's success, Eisner's judgment wasn't infallible. He turned down the script that became Private Benjamin, a huge hit for actress Goldie Hawn. But such lapses were rare, and in any event, Paramount had so many hits that Eisner didn't need to waste time lamenting the few he rejected. "It isn't the movies you pass on that make the difference, but the ones you make," he said so often that it became a refrain. Despite his frugality, Eisner was on occasion willing to take financial risks. After two other studios balked at the high projected costs, and even Diller opposed the project on financial grounds, Eisner signed Star Wars writer George Lucas, director Steven Spielberg, and actor Harrison Ford to make Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. With $240 million in U.S. box office receipts, it became a franchise, a huge hit that spawned a series of highly profitable sequels. Nevertheless, Eisner was fanatical at keeping costs low to earn a profit, a curious iconoclastic view in Hollywood, which had a long and deeply entrenched tradition of rewarding talent, agents, managers, and studio executives before anyone gave much thought to shareholders. After the huge success of Raiders, Eisner recorded his philosophy in a 21-page manifesto distributed to Paramount executives. In it, he noted that nearly all of the studio's profits from 1981 had come from Raiders, an expensive anomaly in the Eisner canon, and he didn't want anyone at Paramount to get the idea that he was veering from his time-tested strategy that combined high concept and low budgets. "Often the big win comes with a single smash movie," he wrote. "The intoxication of a blockbuster hit can lead to an easy sense the luck will keep striking. Over the past 5 years, Paramount has either been number one or two in the motion picture business. Success tends to make you forget what made you successful. And just when you least suspect it, the big error shifts the game. Will success lull us into the fatal bad play?" Eisner proceeded to make his own priorities clear. "We have no obligation to make art. We have no obligation to make history. We have no obligation to make a statement. But to make money, it is often important to make history, to make art, or to make some significant statement.